You are listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. Makai Watch is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with Hawaii Compassionate Care.
Kevin Bako, MD of Hawaii Compassionate Care, offers medical marijuana certification exams at his office in Kapa'a. Information and appointments available at 808-854-6335 or online at HawaiiCompassionateCare.com. That's 808-854-6335 or online at HawaiiCompassionateCare.com.
Mahalo, Hawaii Compassionate Care, for supporting Kauai Community Radio.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of KKCR, its board of directors, staff, volunteers, or underwriters.
Oh, we ain't got a barrel of money. Maybe we're ragged and funny, but we'll travel along, singing a song, side by side. Don't know what...
Aloha, and welcome to Makai Watch, a program about the aina, those things that feed us, focused on information and opportunities for community involvement and the stewardship of our resources on Kauai. Makai, toward the ocean, as all things flow to the sea, and the sea is connected to you and me. Today's show is the beginning of KKCR's Fall Fund Drive, and it is a membership drive, and we need you to become a member today. Support this show and all the wonderful programming here at KKCR. We particularly would like to have you support the idea of an informational, environmental, locally based community radio show such as Makai Watch. Our goal today is $1,000, and we're halfway there. We're halfway there because those of us producing this show have been asking for support for this show so that it will continue. Don't you want to hear me next month, too? Of course you do. So, I also want to be sure that you all know that the Hanalei Makai Watch program publishes the Hanalei Moon and Tide Calendar, currently in its fourth printing, and for the first 8 pledges, we will give you the 2014 calendar. If you need to know that it's this current year, and yes, we're in October, and no, that doesn't seem fair, but when you see the calendar, you'll understand. The information that's in it is not necessarily related to the year. It is a moon and tide calendar, so all of the information regarding the environment, the ocean, the fish, and those sciencey things that are in it, fishy things that are in it, are all valid and true. And you are certainly welcome to buy or receive as a future reward the 2015 calendar when it's out. If that's something you feel really strongly about, please let us know, and we'll try to make a note. Make sure you get one in 2015. My name is Makala, and I'd like to thank KKCR for providing this program and Laura Christine for engineering it for us. We'll be happy to take your calls after we've introduced our subject for today. The number here is 826-7771. We will be running our regular contest today, so listen for the question and win a prize. And good news, this time Laura knows the answer. Today's show will focus on the issue of shoreline setback. The matter is currently before our Kauai County Council as they consider potential amendments to the existing law. The concerns around shoreline setbacks affect every coastal community, especially as we all face sea level rise and development. Our first guest today is Carl Imperato. He is a resident of Hanalei and is involved in several Kauai organizations, including KKCR, and has provided testimony to the council on this issue. He's been working on it, the issues and concerns and details of the shoreline setback ordinance for some time, and has agreed to join us today to provide some background and the proposed changes in the Kauai County ordinance. It's not the simplest of issues, but we trust that Carl's going to bring it home and help us all understand. So thank you, Carl, for coming. We appreciate you taking your time out of the middle of your Monday to be with us.
Well, thank you for having me on here. I guess to get an idea of what the current bill is all about, one has to know what a shoreline setback is. And in order to do that, there needs to be a little bit of background about the law here in the state and the county. And so we start with Hawaii Revised Statutes 205A, which was the Coastal Zone Management Act implementation. That provides the state rules for development in the shoreline management areas along our islands and provides the rules for shoreline development. One of the objectives, for example, of HRS 205A includes protecting and preserving the quality of coastal scenic and open space resources. And a number of the policies include ensuring that development's compatible with the visual environment by designing and locating such development to minimize the alteration of existing public views to and along the shoreline and preserving shoreline open spaces and other scenic resources. So there are a number of objectives and policies in the Act, and they include those as well as policies to protect physically structures and policies to protect shore life, wildlife, birds, sea turtles, etc. So we have the State Act, and then below the state statutes, we have the County of Kauai's Special Management Area Rules and Regulations, and we have our Comprehensive Zoning Ordinance, that's the CZO. And within the Comprehensive Zoning Ordinance, we have a Section 27, which is called Shoreline Setback and Coastal Protection. And so that's the regulatory milieu that we work with here. Now, Hawaii's laws establish that the public has the right to use the shoreline lands up to the highest wash of the waves. And so the first thing you have to figure out is, where is the shoreline? And the way we determine that is through what's called the shoreline certification process, which is triggered in general when there's new development or activities that are proposed for a lot along the shoreline. Public involvement in that process is a critical thing because when it comes time to determine where that shoreline is, there's been a lot of gaming in the past by property owners who have tried to push that shoreline as far Makai as possible by planting artificial vegetation or by trying to do these shoreline certifications during the months when the waters are as low as possible rather than during the higher wash of the waves and other times of the year. So there's been a lot of public participation, especially on the North Shore here, by local residents to try to ensure that when shoreline certifications occur, that they make sure that the public has access to the shoreline throughout the year and not just during the low tide seasons. Now, the shoreline location is also a dynamic thing because there's coastal erosion or coastal accretion. Generally, it's erosion, though, and that's not consistent from year to year, and it may or may not have a pattern over time. In places like Haena, the coast is eroding at about 1 foot per year. And, of course, now we also have issues like sea level rise, which is projected to be about 3 feet over the next 90 years. And, of course, if the sea level rises 3 feet, that can result in many, many more feet of water going back Mauka over time. So determining where the shoreline is not a simple thing, and it also gets us involved in areas that where there are big public policy questions, which are related to the public's right to use the beaches and the shore versus private property rights. Just as in Hawaii, we have a property that's taken away by volcanic activity on the Big Island, shoreline property also gets smaller over time, and that's an issue because if shoreline surveys are only done when property changes hands or when a new building is put on the property, we may not have accurate determinations of where the shoreline is. So there are a number of issues related to determining where the shoreline is, and those are things that really are challenging public policy questions for the next century. But let's assume for the moment that we know where the shoreline is. The next question is, can a property owner build to the Makai edge of his or her property once you know where the edge is? And the answer is no. And that's where Section 27 of the Comprehensive Zoning Ordinance comes into play. It sets the rules for the setbacks from the shoreline by determining how you define this shoreline setback area and what's allowed to be done in that setback area. Now, proper siting of structures is essential for both the property owners who don't want to see their houses get washed away in the waves, and it's essential to the public as well because the public needs to have safe access along the shoreline, and they also need to ensure that if indeed structures aren't situated well, that all these things, as they get ripped up, don't end up landing on the beaches and harming people. So there's a good reason to have a shoreline setback area where we treat this as a buffer zone, and within that buffer zone, nothing can be built. And that gives us time to account for erosion that's going to occur. As I mentioned, if you build a house with a 100-year lifespan in Haena, where the shoreline is eroding at 1 foot a year, you know, ideally you should be at 100 feet back. But that creates a problem, too, because a lot of lots aren't even that deep. And then we have the issue of private property rights and people wanting to use the structure. So coming up with a set of rules for determining how far back your setback line is not necessarily a simple thing, because it has to balance these competing objectives of for the public and for the private property owners. And as I mentioned before, you know, sea level rise is another big animal that we haven't even, you know, brought into any of the real discussions regarding how to create setbacks in light of the sea level rise that's occurring. But we don't want, one thing we don't want to have is 30 years from now, the coast lined with seawalls that are built to protect houses from the encroaching ocean, and then have no beaches or shoreline access except during low tide. And so, you know, it's very important then that the county's shoreline setback laws ensure that when construction occurs along the shoreline, that it's set back far enough so that we don't have a bunch of property owners coming back in 20 years saying, by the way, I'm going to have to build a seawall. And, of course, the county and the may say, no, you can't, but then we have a lot of political pressure to actually allow the people to save their property. So, again, the shoreline setback ordinance has to balance competing objectives, but it's a not a very, very simple ordinance. So what we have right now in the ordinance, which, again, is really Section 27 of the Comprehensive Zoning Ordinance, is as follows. State law says that the shoreline setback has to be a minimum of 40 feet, but counties have a right to go back more than 40 feet. And what happened on this island is in 2008 and 2009, the Comprehensive Zoning Ordinance was amended, and it was a big, big step forward, because in the CZO, the new law said that the setback has to be the greater of a setback that's determined by a formula that's based on the depth of the lot, or a setback that's based on 70 to 100 years of erosion. And that erosion-based setback was a very innovative thing at the time. And what's happened is that since that time, a lot of studies have been done. They're called the Kauai Coastal Erosion Studies. And those studies are based on aerial photos from the past 80 or so years, from which scientists try to assess the erosion rates for every foot along the shoreline by mapping how the vegetation line changes. Now, that stuff is not perfect science, because there are many, many limitations. These photos are taken on different days of the year, in 1925 and 1945, so they might be slightly different seasons. The swells were different at different times of the year, so there's episodic erosion, all these kinds of problems which make the determination of, you know, what the shoreline erosion rate in any given area is less than perfect. So one would not want just to rely on those erosion rates, and that's why what we have in the current ordinance is that the setback has to be the greater of the setback based on lot depth or the setback based on erosion rates. So, for example, if we have poor erosion rate data that says, for example, there's zero erosion in one area, and we know that even if on the long term there was zero erosion along one shore, it very well may be that for the first 20 years the shoreline's been going in by 20 feet, and the next 20 years it's gone back out by 20 feet, so you have to have that buffer zone, and that's why you can't just rely on erosion rates. So the details of our current ordinance are that regarding setbacks, the smallest lots, the lots that are less than 100 feet deep, have a 40-foot setback requirement. Lots that are getting deeper and deeper, like 100 to 160 feet deep, they have to be set back between 40 and 70 feet. And lots that are more than 160 feet deep, they have to be set back at least 80 to 100 feet, or had a setback that's based on 40 feet plus 70 to 100 years worth of erosion in that area. So the erosion rate-based setback is really applied to the deepest of the lots, not to the shallow lots. The current ordinance also says what kind of structures and activities are allowed and prohibited in the setback area. It has rules that allow for repairs and reconstruction on an existing site. and it has rules for variances because it very well may be that given the size of a lot, different other rules need to be bent in order to allow someone to build a house. And it would have to be a smaller house than normal, but still you would have to bend the rules on side yard setbacks and another under other rules. So that's what we've got right now. That's the status quo. Which brings us to the topic of the day, finally. Sorry about that, but there had to be some background. And that's Bill 2461. What this bill is a bill that the county administration has been pushing because it wanted to streamline the process for determining the shoreline setbacks. It wanted to make it easier for the planning department to administer the law. And so they proposed revisions to the ordinance. And these revisions would generally be okay if they don't result in any weakening of the current law. The bill came from the planning department. It went to the planning commission, and from there it went to the county council, where it was sent to a working group. Then from there it went back up to the council's planning committee, and now it's before the full council, which may vote on it next week. And there's been a lot of work on this bill, but one of the problems is that as it proceeded along the way, this working group became dominated by developers and their representatives, a fellow from the Land Use Research Foundation, representatives of A&B, Pierre Omidyar's lawyer, and some others. So between those representatives and county staff that has a greater interest really in streamlining processes and not pressuring developers too hard than it is in protecting the public interest, between those folks, and then there were two people from the public on the working group, those two people from the public were pretty much outnumbered, and that's really affected the integrity of the final product that's before us. What the bill before the council would do is the following. Now, it's got some positives. On the positive side, it adds another 20 feet to the setback requirements for many lots. And that's a safety buffer to try to at least acknowledge that sea level rise is coming. Due to some technicalities, it may not be as much as a 20-foot additional buffer, but it might be a 15-foot buffer. But that's a positive. It addresses issues like landscaping a little bit better than the existing law, and it reduces the minimum buildable footprint from 2,500 square feet, which allows a 5,000-square-foot house on a shoreline lot at a minimum. It reduces that to 1,500 square feet, which then if it was a two-story house, would still be a 3,000-square-foot house. So we're not talking about, you know, little cottages here. So the positive side are those pieces. But now we have the negative side. And on the negative side, because the bill allows the rebuilding of structures to get a free pass, the fact is that when something is rebuilt 50 years, 70 years from now, and the coast has eroded, and you would argue that it's really a new structure that needs to be set further back, the bill basically says, no, you get to build on the existing site. So that's not really too good. It's not much worse than it is today, but it's still sort of a head-in-the-sand approach. We haven't really grappled with this and taken the bull by the horns. The bill also removes the category of activities in the shoreline setback area as a trigger for shoreline certification. So now we don't have as many cases where there'll be updated shoreline certifications if the bill passes as currently written. But worst of all, what the bill does is it creates a blanket exemption from the setback and certification rules for lots that are located 30 feet or more above rocky shorelines. And what it does is it says that if your lot is located 30 feet or more above a rocky shoreline, basically the setback, if the lot is a large lot, would get reduced from the 100-foot requirements today to just 40 feet. Now, that exemption is almost tailor-made to facilitate Pierre Omidyar's scheme to line the ridge above the Hanalei River with dozens of vacation rental structures. As I've noted, his lawyer is on the working group, too, coincidentally. But, you know, reducing the existing 100-foot minimum setback requirement for that kind of a lot to as little as 40 feet would create severe visual impacts along not just the Hanalei Ridge there, but large portions of the rest of Kauai's undeveloped coastline. So that's, I think, one of the most, it's the biggest problem, I think, with the bill right now. Now, some of the council members have been trying to justify this giveaway by saying, well, you know, this ordinance should only be about erosion. And, of course, if you're located 30 feet above sea level, you don't have to worry about erosion. And what they're saying then is that we don't want to worry about things like viewplane protection and habitat for birds and other animals in this ordinance. But it's the only ordinance that exists. They say, well, you know, we should create a viewplane ordinance. We should create another ordinance. But the problem is, in the meantime, you pass this ordinance where you cut the setbacks from 100 feet to 40 feet. Developers come in. They get approved. The horses are out of the barn. And then when we do ultimately try to create another ordinance, it's really too late. So really removing that exemption from the bill is, I think, the most critical thing that really needs to be done. And just so you know, next Wednesday, not this week, Wednesday after this week, the bill will be before the council, and Council Member Chalk, Mason Chalk, will be proposing an amendment to the bill to remove that harmful exemption. And so we'll be working to try to provide support for that. So that's kind of a nutshell of where things are. As you can see, there's a lot at stake here with this bill, and I hope that people will really at least let their council members know that the setback exemption needs to be dropped, support Councilmember Chalk's amendment. Or if that amendment isn't successful, then the whole bill really ought to be killed. And the people from the community who have been working on this bill have basically said that, you know, if this exemption remains in the bill, we're better off with the existing ordinance than changing it. So here we are.
Yeah, that's a terrific, thorough overview of exactly where we stand. And thank you, Carl. One of the things that I want people to realize is that you don't have to have all of that detailed information in order to make your voice heard. A phone call to a councilman that you're comfortable with or that kind of thing is just as appropriate as complex testimony. I know most of us have watched on Hoike as people provide testimony to the council, and it can be a thing, you know, it's a little intimidating. But this is the kind of stuff that matters to us all. If you're a beachgoer, if you're a surfer, if you don't own property on the coast, you care about this shoreline setback. This isn't about the rich folks in Haena or Po'ipu who want to build a big mansion necessarily. This is about how all the rest of us can appreciate and enjoy our shorelines as well. And for those of us who try to speak for critters without voices, we're going to take a bit of a break. And we welcome your calls, 826-7771. And I want to remind you that we are in our fall fund drive, and we are asking for your pledges. We have hopefully budgeted for $1,000 for this show, and we're halfway there. So get us home and call in to say thank you for all that incredible information that Carl just shared. I'm hoping somebody's recording it, because I don't want to say all that again. There's a lot of information there, and it's important that we know the why and the wherefore and the what-ifs of some of this stuff, and it certainly is a Mackay Watch issue. So please call in your pledge, 826-7771, and show your support for those of us who are trying to get this information to you, and encourage you to participate in our process. I think what we'll do is we'll take a break, and then we'll do the contest, and we have a second guest joining us after the break. Be right back.
Love.
You won't miss your water until the well runs dry. I hope some of you have an opportunity to YouTube that sister pair. They're my new latest crush, my girl crush, Rising Appalachia. They're extraordinary. I want to live their life next time. Okay, I'm going to start off the second half of this by doing our little contest, which again, of course, is about water. And again, good news, Laura knows the answer this time. Okay, now I want you to listen carefully because it's a little tricky. Into which stream or river do the waters that fall from Mount Namahana flow? Careful now. Might not be as easy as you think. Call us with your answer, 826-7771, and we will give you a calendar. Carl, of course, is jumping up and down. Cannot answer, Carl. You cannot answer because I've got him on this one many, many times. Tita Swift in the back room raising her hand.
She knows.
I bet she doesn't know.
Ooh.
Okay. So just to tidy up a little bit from the first half, if you're concerned about if you're Laura's saying give this one minute. 826-7771, call us with the answer. Into which stream or river do the waters that fall from Mount Namahana flow? It's not what you're thinking. Okay. So to tidy up from Carl's part here, Bill 2461, if you would like to provide testimony to the council, and this is good at any time, you can email counciltestimony@kauai.gov, and it goes to all of them. And also, we want to remind you that this show will be posted on the KKCR archives, which are posted every Wednesday. So if there's any of that information that Carl was speaking to that you missed or that you want to hear again, that's the way to access that information. What we are suggesting is that you want to kill that exemption. With the exemption in it, the whole bill's junk, to put it in my terms, since the disclaimer covers everything I say, right? And the council is due to vote on that, not this Wednesday, but next Wednesday. So you have some time. You have some time to ask your friends, call Carl, do a little more homework if you need to, or just take our word for it that this is probably not a good thing. Okay. Again, we remind you that this is our first day of our fall fund drive, and we are asking for your support for this program and all the wonderful programs of KKCR. 826-7771 and pledge, please. We hoped $4,000 for this show, and we're at $500. And you don't want to make me mad or sad. So don't make me sad. So we're going to segue now into one of the subjects that was not discussed at council, either in committee or at council, when this bill, this shoreline setback bill, was being discussed. They completely left them out. And that's not okay. So we brought someone into the studio today who can talk about what was left out and something that is near and dear to my heart for sure. And that is the birds. So our second guest in the studio today is Hob Osterlund. She is the founder of the Kauai Albatross Network and has been working to support safe habitat for native seabirds for the last 10 years. We asked her to join us today to bring the birds into this conversation. We're talking about shorelines today and how they are impacted by human uses, but there are several very important users without a voice in this discussion, the birds. Shearwaters, petrels, tropic birds, boobies, and the largest of them all, the Laysan albatross. So, Hob, thanks for coming today. We're really happy that you're here, and we want you to tell us about the importance of the shoreline to these birds. Aloha.
Aloha. Thank you, Makaala, for inviting me here today.
I'm delighted to have an opportunity to speak for these great native beings among us. As you know, they've been here for a very long time, much, much longer than we've been here. And they have increasing threats all over the ocean, all over the shoreline, all over the food sources. They, here on Kauai, the 5% of their lives, for the albatross, the 5% of their lives that they spend on ground, on solid ground. They deal with loose dogs, feral cats, even some mongoose from time to time. Of course, there's the plastics. They deal with longline fishing out in the ocean, and just generally a decrease in their food supply. So some of you may be aware that the main Hawaiian Islands, which is the northwestern Hawaiian Islands, which is their mothership, it is their primary nesting grounds, maybe 2 million albatross nest at a place in the three islands of Midway, is going underwater. It's basically a flat island. It's going underwater. You've heard Carl mention the 3 feet of sea level rise. It's going to be uninhabitable for them way before that because of storms. For example, when the Japanese tsunami happened a few years ago, when a 5-foot wave then crashed across Midway and took out 250,000 albatross chicks. So the only good news about that particular storm was that it happened in March instead of February, when it also would have taken out their parents. So we have on Kauai three things that make it possible for the birds to thrive here. One of them is that we have elevated bluffs. The other thing is that we have a virtual absence of mongoose. We do have some mongoose here. They've been spotted and they've been occasionally trapped, but they're very, very difficult to find. We do have them here, but way less than Maui and the Big Island and Oahu have. And the third thing is, the reason we're talking about this today, is we have people who care. We have people on Kauai who care a lot about these birds. Basically, if we take away the coastal habitat, the zoning for them to be protected in that buffer area, we've actually ruined their chances anywhere. Because shearwaters, the wedge-tailed shearwaters may have some other possibilities, but the albatross really don't. The albatross have to have some flat land. They have to have a place where there's fencing, protection from dogs, and some people who are willing to say, you know what, we can coexist with these animals. We don't have to have everything ourselves, with the exemption of all the other creatures that we live among. They add so much beauty to our lives. They add so much joy to us. And even if they didn't, they have a right to exist all on their own. They are native here, and anyone who is from here or has moved here and now feels that this is home has an obligation to help protect them, in my mind. So I'm happy to be able to encourage all of your voices to talk about not allowing this particular exemption. I'm delighted to know about the testimony date. I'm going to be there. I hope all of you will be there or send testimony to your council members. I'm delighted that Mason Chalk is actually introducing that exemption. We have an opportunity right now. This is our time. We don't have time to wait for this. The sea level rise is happening quickly. Some of you may know that I use the analogy of Noah's Ark, that Kauai is Noah's Ark for these birds. They don't have other places to go. They can't say, let's just let them go to Maui, or let's just let them go to the Big Island, because they cannot. They can only come to Kauai because of those three features that I mentioned. The other places do have people that care so much, but you learn to care about them because you've seen them. You see their beauty. You see their grace. You see who they are among us, and you want to protect them. It's the right thing to do. Actually, I think we need them more than they need us, because they make us feel our own perfection and our own belonging here in this beautiful place. So I don't think we have a choice but to protect them. Never mind about a house that can be too close for them. Back it up a little bit. Everybody's got beautiful views. They don't lose anything.
That's a great intro. Thank you so much. And I'm feeling a strong sense of kuleana. Not that I needed to be added to, but I do. So for the Kauai Albatross Network, it's a group of people that do what for the albatross? Because one of the things that we think about when we think about a Noah's Ark is maybe there's a kind of a sequestered place. Maybe there's a reserve or something. Mm-hmm. And there's a little bit of that, but there's also just individual people who are really spending money, spending time, providing data. So tell me a little bit about where some of the albatross are right now on Kauai.
There are actually none on Kauai at the moment, but we should be seeing them back starting the first week in November. I think November 7th, 8th is usually when I see about the first one. Should be a boy usually the first one back. He's ready to get it on. It's time. It's his once a year. So he's ready, and he's ready for her to come home. So he stands there and waits, and then she shows up. So as you may know, our pairs are long-term mates. Many of them mate for life, and they're a bird that can live, we know now, to oldest living wild bird in the world is 63 years old, a Laysan albatross, and she just raised another chick at Midway. So we haven't scratched the surface of what we know about these birds. But they will start coming back. They will return to their mates. If their mate has survived the season, they will return to their mates. They will often nest in precisely the same spot they nested last year and the year before, sometimes within a few feet. Sometimes I've seen birds that won't get outside of a 3 or 4 foot radius of where they want to be exactly. Their GPS is enormously precise. If I could just give you an illustration of what they have to do to find Kauai in the first place. When they go out to forage at sea, they are foraging an area the size of the United States. They're foraging an area 4 million square miles. Right? We just did some GPS mapping. So 4 million, that's just the parents, actually. The ones that are in between, they might even go farther. But parents were tracked from Nainokai Botanical Gardens this year. They covered an area 2,000 miles by 2,000 miles. So we're talking about 4 million square miles. The entire United States, including Alaska, is 3.8 million miles. So we're talking, imagine that. Imagine looking for food for your baby in an area between San Francisco and New York and the tip of Texas all the way up to the Canadian border. That's what they're looking for. Now, that's miracle enough that they can do that, that they can fly all that range to forage for themselves and then for their babies. After that, they have to find Kauai. Imagine. This, and the place they're looking for is probably a half an acre, a quarter acre. They're looking for the place that they're going to meet their mate. They've been separated all season. They're going to meet their mate now. They're so excited to get back. They find a tiny, tiny little speck in the entire Pacific. Could you find a single acre in all of the United States?
Because you can't find my slippers.
We need a map to get to Lihue. New people here need a map to get to Lihue, and there's one road. I mean, figure, yeah? So these birds know a wealth of information. It's not necessarily by stars, because often it's so cloudy, they can't see the stars either. We can't explain how they can do it, but they do it. They come here, and they find the tiniest little precise spot to meet up with their mate and to raise their baby. That alone deserves enormous respect from us. So very soon.
And some of them, you mentioned the Ainukai, so some of them go to protected places that are watched, and some of them just go into your yard. And the reason that this connects with what we're talking about with the shoreline setback is that as we need to preserve that area on the bluff, that is a setback issue. It is a setback issue on a rocky coastline where people are saying that's not a beach issue, there's not an erosion issue. Well, there's a lot of reasons that we want to protect the view for us. There's a lot of things we want to do for us. But there's also a responsibility, in my opinion, that we do this kind of thing for those things who depend on us, as we're saying. It's our responsibility. But when you get this picture of just a little, he doesn't need much, although this is a big bird. And so, you know, when you're watching them take off, they need a little runway. But they're landing in people's yards. People are expending money. They're fencing if they can, trying to keep stray dogs away, trying to keep feral cats away, and trying to provide the privacy that a nesting pair and a baby requires. Mm-hmm. And I've watched a couple of them, but tell me about how everybody else can watch them too, because there is a bird cam, a critter cam, an albatross cam that you have coordinated on Kauai that is unique in all the country and fabulous. So if you don't know what is going on, as soon as one of these cameras is set up, then I'll make sure that Hob gives you the addresses and the connections so that you can turn on to the cam. And this means two things. One, we learn more about them. We know that we protect what we understand and love. But you also don't have to go bug the bird. It's a little freaky, I'll tell you. I was watching the cam last season, and this fluffy little thing is sitting in his nest, and it has audio. And I could hear the lawnmower coming. and I was freaking out, and I called Hub, and I said, no, this can't be, and she said, no, just watch, and the lawnmower goes by him, he watches the lawnmower go by, and he watches, and I go, oh, my goodness, he's adapted. As long as the lawnmower doesn't go over the top of him, he sits still. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, although we're trying to give them privacy, they're pretty capable of putting up with our stuff, too. Oh, so yeah. Tell me about the cam. You don't have to tell me where they are, of course, but tell me how you got that to happen, and tell me how people can go watch when it's time.
Well, shortly after I realized what good fortune it is to be around the albatross, I wanted to share it. And so I thought most people in the world will never have a chance. They're 95% of their lives at sea, and where they do nest often are inhospitable islands where you can't get. So, but you can get to Kauai, and you can see them here, the only place in the whole world that's accessible to anybody of any age, any physical abilities. This is something huge that I think that we can also promote economically. But the albatross are here, and I was looking for a property where that would be good for a streaming camera, and then I was looking for a company to stream the camera. So what we needed was a whole bunch of things to come together. We needed a good nest, of course. We needed a property owner that approved it, and we needed for there to be good bandwidth in that area. So once we found something that looked like it was a possibility, I contacted Cornell Lab of Ornithology in New York. They were very excited. Took 18 months of conversations and planning and all that. But this year, we launched the first one on January 27th, the day the chick hatched. And 2 million hits on that website. It's allaboutbirds.org. 2 million hits, 195 countries. People got a chance to really fall in love with an albatross chick, watching it grow up, watching the nurturing and the affection of its parents, watching courtship behaviors on the part of the teenagers that come for the singles bar scene. All of that is available to watch on the camera. So this year, the same property owners have agreed to allow it again. They've been very supportive of it. We've got several local donors that help pay for the equipment. And so now, of course, it's up to the birds. They have to lay an egg somewhere on that property. And so we have to be able to count on them to do that. But I'm confident that it'll happen. Then we need to set up the camera, and the goal this year is to start streaming it a bit earlier so we can watch the brooding, watch being on the egg and anticipate the hatch. And it's for people who are not used to bird watching, it sounds a little boring to sit watch a bird sitting on an egg, but I tell you what, it isn't. It's really fun. And then the chicks, of course, get very mobile after they're about 3 or 4 weeks old. They start wandering all around because they're very curious and very bright. And
that's just not okay. You're watching this chick, and he's sitting on his nest, and you're feeling his sense of safety and comfort and security, and parents are coming one at a time to feed him and so forth. And then you turn on the cam, and he's gone.
Yeah.
He's wandered off.
Yeah.
And I want to say, no, the cameras, you stay there.
You stay there, right. Well, that's why we have many wonderful volunteers that helped were cam operators this year, because we did have to follow them during all the daylight hours. And Sabra Kalka named her. She was Kaloa Kalua. And so Kaloa Kalua was, from the beginning, a curious, wandering albatross chick. So we knew she was going to be an explorer, and we knew we had to follow the camera around her. So we followed her all the way to Fledge, as she actually went around the back of this house where we couldn't see her from that camera, but there happened to be some vacation renters at the time who filmed her fledging. And it was that wonderful experience, wonderful mixed experience, I think, that all parents have, that you're overjoyed for the freedom of your child and you miss them too.
And you say, we'll see you again next year. So I want to just repeat, that's allaboutbirds.org.
Right.
And the Kauai Albatross Network. So I need you to talk about that for just a second.
We have someone that has
questions. Oh, go ahead. Okay. We'll take a question. Happily. Aloha, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. How are you?
Good. It's too bad your association wasn't active when they built those condominiums in Princeville in that circle of 5 acres.
Mm. Yes.
And that was a very, very popular nesting area for albatross.
It was indeed.
Yes. We all remember the time that I remember stopping and watching them cross the road. It was better than the speed bump that's there now. Yes. Yes.
Yeah, and people who actually run them over actually crossing the road, so.
Yes, that was a shame. But I also was there one day when the bird used the road as the runway. And I thought, well, now that's appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
It looked just like a plane leaving the runway. Mm-hmm. Thank you for that memory. We all watched as those were constructed because they, you might remember, they constricted the albatross's area there for a while. They really tried to build on the other side, and
yes.
his space got smaller yes. and smaller. And I think we were all very upset. And I remember asking, what are they going to do? And I was told, they'll move. They'll just move across the road. And for a while they did, but lately I haven't seen them in the tree up there the last couple of years. But we all got up close and personal.
They're disturbed by the golfers.
No doubt.
Yeah. And the lawnmowers.
Yes.
So.
Yes. Thank you for that memory. And that's good motivation to talk about that, the setback, too. Then we don't want, we know, you know, when we know better, we do better. And we know better about some of the things that need habitat on this island that we share.
Absolutely.
Yes. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
I feel somebody should be responsible for that, or held responsible for that. You know.
I understand.
They ruined the habitat.
I understand. I don't know. Do we know, Bob, where those birds went?
It was probably Dave Walters who was passed on by now. I don't know.
No, there's someone in Princeville who's been monitoring the birds there for 10 years. She knows all the information about where the birds are, where they've gone, what their bands are, all of that. She's been doing volunteer band tracking all this time. So, but the point that you make that's so good is that they're running into obstacles all kinds of places. In and of themselves, those condominiums wouldn't have been all that bad because they could have moved. But if you add that to loose dogs and you add that to traffic and you add it to feral cats, then we have a collection of problems.
We have a huge problem.
Yeah, exactly. There's a whole collection of them. So where do we draw the line? Where do we say, you know what, this is really an important thing for us to allow them some safety somewhere in the world?
Yes, I agree. Thank you very much for your call.
Well,
that was very helpful.
They're protected out there by the lighthouse. So. They're still out there.
Yes, thank you. They are still out there.
Okay.
We have a winner on the contest because... Thank you for your call. Wait a minute. We have a winner for the contest because Tita says that they're right. What's up with that? Oh, she got the answer from you? All right.
No,
so it's legit?
Because you're almost done.
I'm not almost done. You went over 10. I'm going over 10.
You go right ahead. All day.
We have a winner. All right.
I can listen to you all day.
Oh, I love you too. So
the winner is that Sandy Swift.
Oh, jeez. Okay, so here's the deal. When you're surfing in the lineup, and that's surfing, not surfing, in the lineup in Hanalei Bay, and you're looking mauka, and you see all those beautiful falls, that water does not go into the Hanalei River.
Sorry. No.
No. That water goes into Waioli. And don't ever forget it.
I will never forget it.
Thank you for your call. Laura, you might need
of all the bacteria that's in the water in Hanalei right now.
Thank you so much for your call. Okay, so the Quiet Albatross Network, is that a membership organization?
No, well, it's a loose collection of volunteers. We do all pro bono work.
Kind of like KKCR. It's a loose collection.
That's right.
You're calling me loose.
Yeah. calling all us loose.
You loose.
During our fund drive, it's pretty loose.
It's a collection of volunteers who offer pro bono work primarily to the private landowners who want to do something to protect the birds. So we want to help them understand about fences. We want to help them understand about trapping feral cats and taking them to Humane Society. Our Humane Society will come pick them up for us. About dogs, some of you may remember we had a horrible dog kill last year in the Molawa'a area and Kilauea area. And so this year we're volunteering to help trap the dogs. Because when you start putting traps out, you have to check them every day. So there's trapping. There is keeping those animals safe. We actually did have on the live cam on Kalua Kalua, we did have a dog show up one day on the camera, nearly caused cardiac
freak everybody out.
All over the world. Actually, someone from Seattle saw it first and called someone here in Hanalei who called me, and we were there.
Oh,
so
fabulous.
It took us 6 weeks to trap that dog. And get this. Albatross and native birds, something I really want everybody to know, is that native birds did not grow up with predators. So they have no idea what a predator is. They don't have...
They see a dog as a visitor.
They don't have built-in defenses.
Yeah.
And so that's one of... That's many... there are many problems related to the shearwaters and the petrels and the albatross and tropic birds. All of them nesting on the ground have those predators. They don't know how to recognize. They don't know how to fight them off. They don't know how to run away. No fight, no flight, no play dead. They don't know any of that. So here's this albatross chick that's about 9 weeks old, and a dog comes onto the camera, a hunting dog comes on the camera, looks at the camera, which is quite an amazing thing, because usually when there's dog kill, we never know which dog did it, right? There's never a camera on
gotcha.
It when it happens. So he comes in and goes, ta-da, does a selfie on the cam, then goes over to the sleeping albatross chick and sniffs her neck. Now, this dogs break necks of birds, right? Went and sniffed her neck, and she didn't even wake up because she wasn't alarmed. This was not anything to be scared of. So if she had snapped awake...
Didn't smell a thing.
But if she had snapped awake, I'm certain he would have realized that was a prey and then taken her out. So he just walked on and never came back to that property.
It was just a ball of...
He was just a ball of fluff. Nothing to worry about. So we then did a vigil on that property for days, and then finally ended up being trapped just down the road by some friendly neighbors who said, I think that's the same dog. And then, thanks to the Kauai Humane Society putting a great plug for what they do, they adopted that dog out. So, and one of our volunteers named it. It was named Makakilo. It had the most beautiful blue eyes. Makakilo, gorgeous animal, gorgeous but abandoned and skinny and hungry. So they adopted Makakilo to a good home, and it was a full circle good news story.
That's a fabulous story. I am going to honor the top of the hour.
Okay. And One World Radio is coming up in or 10 minutes with Richard.
Whenever you stop.
Whenever Makaala stops talking.
Or me.
You are listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. Makaiwatch is made possible by listeners like you. You want me to do the whole thing?
Let's do it, Richard.
Okay. And we remind you that we are in our fall fun drive, and we encourage you to become a member of this amazing station this year. It costs money to run this place, and I threaten to use this, and I'm going to, because of a confluence of circumstances, including singing Hawaiian tree snail sex and lightning. There are equipment expenses. There are repairs to be made. If you don't know the details of that story, Google it. It is, in fact, the truth, and it did require expenses of KKCR and our antenna, and those things cost money. There's no way to volunteer that out. That's expertise that is expensive. Those of you that join Democracy Now! Before we started, that's an expensive show. That costs over $3,000 that KKCR pays. It doesn't just arrive on the airwaves. And all the volunteers in the world can't keep the lights on, no matter how fast we bicycle. So thank you for listening to this show, and I want to wind up and make the connection again between Carl and Hob and the Shoreline Setback Bill 2461 that is currently being considered by the Kauai County Council. And if you live off-island, you can testify, too. Council testimony at kauai.gov. It goes to all of the council members. And we are recommending that, they are recommending that we kill the exemption for the rocky shorelines, because indeed it is that setback above the rocky shoreline where the bluff is that protects the viewplanes, will protect Hanalei River Ridge as best as possible, and certainly will protect the habitat of all of these native Hawaiian seabirds who called this place home before any of us, any man, brown, white, or green, had any idea that these rocks existed as a potential place to live. For a community radio station to know its community, we need you to participate, and we ask you to participate in our process, but also to care about the things that are around you, and we know that you do. So please let us know if you have a burning idea that you would like to see us tackle. We'd be happy to do that. And I, Carl, you want to say one parting thing, and then I'll give Hob a chance to say one parting thing, and then I'll have a last sentence, and then we will be po. You want to say one parting thing about the bill? Or?
Well, I think we've said it all. But it's a parting thing about KKCR, actually.
Sure.
As a member of the board of directors, I know full well we only pick up about a third of our expenses through the donations of members and all, and we need to up that. So we're less dependent on the federal government for the other portions. So please consider donating to the station.
Thank you. For this show, our goal was 1,000. We're at 500. We would love to have your support, and I would take it as a recommendation to keep doing what we're doing, which I probably will do anyway, but it would be nice to have your support. Bob, anything else you'd like to add?
Yes, I'd like to quote Terry Tempest Williams in her newest book. She talks about this time that we've entered now that we can all feel. This is a time of either breakthrough or breakdown. This is a time in that this next decade, this next 10 years or so, is the time that we have to act. If we fail to act, we will have lost so much. So much. There's no time to wait anymore. There's no time to say, I'll do it later or someone else will do it. Every single one of you matter. Every single one of the tiniest little molecule you'll feel in your heart of love in your heart for this place and for its creatures, please express it. Don't wait. It's important.
There is no tomorrow. So I'm going to close this out by saying Happy Indigenous Peoples Day.
Yeah.
I realize that today is a federal holiday, and I'm assuming all of you are enjoying a day off. And we thank you for your calls, and we thank you for your support. And please let us know if there are subjects that you would like this show to cover in the future. We are happy to accommodate. We will be talking about the statewide Mackay Watch program having been approved by the Board of Land and Natural Resources soon. We will be talking about the Ha'ena Community-Based Subsistence Fishing Area rules. We will be talking about the Blackpot Master Plan. We will be talking about the Hunalei Riverbank Stabilization Project. We will be talking about Waipa. We'll be talking about the Marine Sanctuary. So give us some of your other ideas, because we're flexible. If we're not nothing else, we are flexible. So mahalo for listening today. And aloha.